Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Jean-Doe Massaero, an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. We've been having a series of conversations about the influence of François Delsart and his younger brother Camille Delsart on Alexander and the Alexander Technique. I think we've established pretty well that there was an extremely strong influence. We know, for example, that Alexander held himself out as a Delsart teacher when he was in Australia, and that Camille Delsart was living in Tasmania for some 20 years and influenced a lot of the people that Alexander knew in Australia. One thing we have not talked about is the Alexander Technique concept of inhibition. And the question I had for Jean-Doe was, how, if in any way, the Delsart influence on Alexander framed his idea about inhibition. And I thought before we begin that conversation, it might be good for each of us to give our own super short description of what we think of as inhibition. How would you like to go first, Jean-Doe?
Hello. Well, thank you.
I sprung that on you.
No, it's fine. I'm not going to give you a long description, but I want to relate the description I'm going to give you to the early Alexander Technique, the Alexander Technique that was on in 1896 up till 1914 somehow, where the Delsart influence was great. So it's going to be a definition of inhibition that is not similar. To the definition I learned in my school of the modern Alexander Technique.
Okay.
For Delsart, there are intellectual aspects of organizing the different parts of the torso, which is the center of his practical system. And he makes a very important distinction between two different uses to employment of the intellectual system that people have. And he says that in the guiding, the organization, and the willing of the different movements of the part of the torso, perceptual thinking has no place. It's only what he called action-bound thinking that should be there. So in order to inhibit the perceptual thinking about what you feel, he introduces mirrors. Mm-hmm. He said that you'd have to project the intellectual instructions to the different parts of your reflection of the torso. So that is a definition of inhibition that is, the one I'm using at the moment.
So it's an indirect way of getting you away from relying on sensory data.
Exactly.
Because sensory data, as we all know, could be inaccurate.
Yeah.
And your own method of teaching, which we'll get to more in some subsequent podcasts, but You would not only suggest the mirror, but also with using Skype video, actually looking have the student observe themselves as they attempt to follow your instructions, and then listen to your commentaries on it, basically.
Yes.
In other words,
exactly.
get feedback. It's a different kind of a mirror. It's the mirror from a video camera, but with some audio component as well.
Yeah, it's right. An enhanced mirror.
Yeah, because mirror 2.0.
Yes, right. And Well, it's not only in Skype lessons. Of course, in Skype lesson, we only have the video. But
right.
During the lessons we give one to one or one to many, there is always the adjunct of the video, so that the pupil can work on themselves later on and reason on what they see themselves doing when they are, in fact, projecting instructions.
Okay, so that approach then says, even if it's an in-person session, you would record it so that student could then come back to the same sort of thing they would come back to with a Skype session.
Exactly.
And that,
yeah, it's fundamental that the pupil can work on himself using the same reason instruction, and then he can do something even better, is that he's going to reason how he could translate the instruction in his practical will differently in order to, in fact, project in his reflection something that is more according to the geometrical proposition he was subjected to in the first place, because the means whereby of, for example, lengthening the spine have to be very clearly recognized by the pupil. And so he's working on a conscious basis. He's not trying to make something happen out of thin air. He's really following, Delsarte was using diagrams or representation before you wanted to, in fact, impress your reflection on the mirror. We do the same. We propose to the student a system of coding of actions so that he can understand every one and each of the action of the torso he has to produce in order to get the spine to lengthen, the neck to be free, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So if we were to move to... by comparison to a sort of modern Alexander technique concept of inhibition, which I guess the first thing to say, it has nothing to do with Freud or repression, which is pretty useful to point out to people. So there are a lot of different ways of describing that. I once went to a talk that Marjorie Barlow, Alexander's niece, gave in London around 1980 or so. And she likened inhibition to neutral in a gear shift of a manual transmission car, 5-speed in America car, which a lot of people don't know about anymore, but there are still some people who use manual transmissions, and you have to go through neutral if you're going to go from first gear to reverse. And her idea is that it's somewhat analogous to that. It's sort of a brief transitional stopping and then changing direction. Another definition a description from the other Marjorie Barstow, American teacher of the technique who studied with Alexander, she basically said in her Nebraska language, well, if there's something you don't want to do and you do something different, then you're not doing the thing you didn't want to do. So that's another possible definition of inhibition, and there are many others, and there are endless debates in the Alexander world of whether is inhibition an activity or not an activity, et cetera, which I don't think are worth getting into here. But a more general question would be for you: can you see any hint of Delsarte's influence on the modern view? The current modern view of inhibition?
No connection
at all.
I don't know. It's very, very difficult because the technique has changed so much nowadays that The old concept or principles, so for example, there was a principle of mechanical advantage, what we call positions of mechanical advantage or geometry of mechanical advantage that was so important at the start of the technique. Nowadays, it's a word that we know, that we understand, but I was in Limerick during the big convention this last summer, and I had a glimpse at the exchange sessions where people were working, and I watched a little bit, and I found none of it in practice. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very difficult to relate now the modern Alexander technique concept of inhibition with the Delsarte system and the early Alexander technique. So maybe I should give you an example.
Sure.
That would make it a bit more concrete, because it's like words in the air at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know that I had a long conversation with the books of Alexander when I translated his four books into French.
Yes.
And in the conversation with the books, very often the books are asking questions about of you. Of the translator, you know, mm-hmm. is it the question is, do you understand what I mean?
Right.
Very often. Right. So I want to give you an example of a sentence, and I will show you what we call inhibition, what was called inhibition at the time, and what and then you can make in your mind the difference with what is now inhibition. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there is a sentence in Man's Supreme Inheritance. So I'm using the reprinted version of 1946 so that everybody mm-hmm. will find the reference mm-hmm. because it's the most common one. It's on page 166. Mm-hmm. So you will see that the sentence is very, very small. That is what it says. It says, arms hanging vertically in the mirror is a geometry of mechanical advantage. Sorry, I lost it. It says, with the arms hanging vertically, the relative position of that part of the thorax where the lungs are situated will be seen to be in front of the arms instead of being, as it should be, behind them. So let me explain how a translator faced by this sentence will have to react. And what procedure, if he wants really to go to the bottom of this, he must create in order to check. Mm-hmm. So the first thing in the sentence is Alexander is looking at someone from the side. Because if you look at somebody from the front, you can't see the relative position of the part of the thorax where mm-hmm. the lungs are, forward or behind.
Right.
So that the first thing you have to represent in your mind what the man is talking about. So the first thing is, okay, that's a side view. It's not written. You have to reason in order to make that. Okay.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
I will invite people to look at the sentence and see if they concur, if they think the same as I do. But for the moment, for the sake of the explanation, let's say that we are looking at someone from the side with the arm hanging vertically. Which is a quite interesting question, because while I was in Limerick, I had a photo, a camera, you know, I took many, many pictures of teachers and students working or resting. And it was quite interesting to observe the pictures, because when they were resting, you could see no arms hanging vertically. Mm-hmm. So that is quite strange, you know, knowing that we are a bunch of people interested in positions of mechanical advantage, because you have to understand that when you hold a pendulum, which is a mechanical object, it's something that has weight that you hold from its upper hand, mm-hmm. The resting position is vertical. That's mm-hmm. that's clear,
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But teachers and student position of the arm in resting was not vertical. they were not trained like this. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand that the shoulder has to be, in fact, stiffened against the weight of gravity acting on the arm. Mm-hmm. And that is easy to see in a mirror when you are vertical or not. Yeah?
Right.
So imagine that you wanted to apply a position of mechanical advantage. So in the mirror, you would, consciously direct the top and the bottom of the arm in such a way as to align them to the vertical of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. So after years and years of training and learning to release, inhibit contractions, it's quite strange that the teacher's arm are not hanging vertically.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings another question, and there we have a sentence from Alexander. He says, the true uses of the muscular mechanism, the means of placing the body in a position of mechanical advantage, must be studied, where the work will naturally devolve on those muscles intended to carry it out, and the neck will be relaxed unconsciously. That's Man Supreme and Intense, page 58.
Mm-hmm.
So if you relate the two sentences together, now you can see, okay, if the shoulder are in a state of war with gravity,
mm-hmm.
and because they are attached to the neck, it's impossible for the neck to be free, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't exactly say a state of war, but what you're saying is the pulls from your arm, if it's not straight, are going to create some pulls on the neck that are going to be tough to overcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the position of mechanical advantage at rest of the arm is vertical. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
So before we see what is the relative position of the part of the thorax, it's important to, first of all, come back to inhibition and say, what is it to inhibit in that particular activity of letting the arm be at rest? Yeah. Well, when you use a mirror, you can, of course, set your arm on a vertical position.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that this is geometrically a position of mechanical advantage because there is no undue contraction on the arm.
Mm-hmm.
But your perceptual thinking is not going to say the same thing at all.
Right.
You will, when the arms are hanging vertically, if you have an habit of pulling the arm forward, I can tell you something, is that you're not going to feel at rest at all.
Right, exactly.
So there will be,
there's an example of inhibiting what feels right, basically, by using the relatively objective mirror or camera to see what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And then. Yeah. Okay. And then.
And then you are into the realm of action by thinking, where you decide by reason that mm-hmm. hanging vertical is more at rest than not.
Mm-hmm.
And your feeling is telling you exactly the opposite.
Right.
Your feeling is like shrieking
yes.
in the background,
yeah.
telling you to stop that.
And I've had the privilege of experiencing that very thing working with you recently, and it's more than just standing looking at yourself sideways in the mirror and making your arm vertical. It's it has to involve some other stuff too, which I don't want to get into, but it's a slightly more complex thing to do than just
because the second part of the sentence then comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the arms hanging vertically, then you have to check the relative position of the part of the thorax where the lungs are situated.
Right, right. And so there's some
gravity.
Yeah, yeah. There, I mean, I think it might not probably be best not to get into details on that, but more than just, it's just more than deciding to straighten your arm. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And of course. And that also ties in, and I think I'd like to come to an, I think we've got a pretty good idea now of what Del Sartre's implicit concept of inhibition was, right? But just as a final take on that particular example that you just gave, elsewhere in, I believe it's Man's Supreme Inheritance, I don't have the page reference handy, Alexander asks of himself, or he says, he asks a question that actually seems like a very reasonable question to ask, which is, how can I tell if someone has good use or not, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's his question. And then, amazingly enough, he gives an extraordinarily precise answer to that question. Not just whether it's good or not, but how good. You can tell exactly how good it is. And it's basically watch the person from behind standing normally and look at the palms of their hands. And if they're facing backwards, the guy's got perfect use. And if they're facing forward, he's got terrible use, which we could talk about for a second. And if they're facing in towards his body, well, just sort of average run-of-the-mill use. And the forward part's embarrassing because you don't really see people walking around with the palms of their hands facing forward. In fact, the only time you see that is in, it is the position of, what's the term? It's a almost like an anthropological term. But it is how physical anthropologists would ask natives to stand to be sketched or photographed so they could make comparative measurements more easily. So no real person actually goes around with their palms forward. But Alexander may never have seen an Aboriginal. He just saw sketches of them. Who knows? I mean, they were all wiped out in Tasmania by the time he came along. And so we could discount that as pathetic. But the other side of the thing, hand and palms facing backwards, is also a little iffy because some people have their palms facing backwards and have terrible use. But there is a strong kernel of truth in it as well, related to what you were just talking about. Would you not agree?
Yes, that's clear.
When you do what you need to do to really have your arms straight and integrate it with the rest of you, your palms are going to be facing backwards.
Yeah.
So,
but it's a consequence.
Absolutely, it's a consequence, but it was enough of a consequence that Alexander felt okay saying, hey, this is an absolute way to measure use. And I encourage Alexander teachers to go around observing their contemporaries and their teaching course directors and anyone out there and just catch them off guard, look at what they do with their hands when they're standing and see if they satisfy Alexander's universal use test criteria. But that's a bit of an aside. But I think we've covered the inhibition stuff pretty well, don't you think?
Yes, I think so.
So we got a lot more podcasts to do today. So my guest today has been Jean-Daud Massaero, an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. Jean-Daud, thank you so much.
You're welcome.